Kiss Army. Welcome to Alive Unplugged, the Music of Kiss podcast series. Join us as we celebrate the hottest band in the world in song and conversation.
Hey, everyone. Hope you guys are doing well out there in podcast land on all the streaming sites that you may listen to it on. We hope you're doing well. I say we because I'm not by myself today. Of course, my name is Cameron Duty, host of Alive Unplugged, the Music of Kiss podcast series. But I have some good friends who have dropped in today in my corner of the Kiss room. There's one pun that's gonna kind of give you a hint. Mr. Matt Porter. And also, I have a good friend from the Alive Unplugged series, and you'll recognize a lot of his graphic work, Mr. Christopher Goff. So, guys, good to have you on here. I'm really excited about having you, and everybody I know is really excited to hear what you guys have to say today.
Pleasure to be here.
Thrilled to be here. You know, I'm coming from the Kiss room. Chris comes from the Kiss world, so that's where you can't stuff that in the closet. So it's.
And I come from the Kiss apartment. So. Kiss apartment. So there you go. So. Gentlemen, I hope things have been going well in your neck of the woods. Anybody who's been on social media will certainly know that it's been a busy time, a hectic time, a lot of things that have happened in the music events the last few days, you know, with the passing of some great artists and you know, our condolences go out to them. But we're here tonight to have a little bit of fun, to talk, kind of get our mind off of just the normal everyday, you know. So what we're going to talk about, folks, is we may be a little late to the party, but that's okay because usually the party is at the very end. You save the best for last for the encore, right?
Right.
So we are going to talk about the A&E documentary of Kistry. And we're going to go over everything that we think, you know, all of the things we like, the things we dislike. Just completely honest assessment because we are fans, but we're not blind either. You know, we see things, pluses and negatives that may have went along with it. I think we can say that we all truly enjoyed it for the most part. But we're going to dig down deep a little bit and just go into things. I'm going to let you guys have the floor first. We're going to go around. We will do a general consensus. And I will let you just kind of give a brief, you know, overview of what you thought about it, and then we'll dive down deep into a couple of questions. So, Christopher, well, let's let you do it first, because what I'm going to do is I'm going to let you kind of give us a little backstory of your Kistry, and then you can lead right into your opinion on the documentary, since this is your first time on the show.
Okay. Well, 1987 was when I discovered the band, the Crazy Nights era, and then from there I went backward into the catalog and caught myself up. And I remember being really disappointed at that point, you know, thinking I'll never get to see the original four together, the costumes, the makeup, the fire breathing, all that jazz. And then, you know, 96 comes around and dreams come true. So that was a great time to be a Kiss fan. You know, it's just always been my band. It's the band that I identify with the best. It was the first band that I ever discovered on my own, apart from other influences in my life. And so, yeah, lifelong. And, you know, as far as the documentary goes, I thought it was great. You know, if you take out all the commercials, you've got 3 hours. And within 3 hours, you got to fit 50 years of stuff, which is really hard to do. So as I expected, you know, the 80s and the 90s, a little bit of a breeze over. But by and large, it's the best, I think, that we've seen so far. A&E did a really great job with it. It would have been great if Ace and Peter could have, you know, laid down the gauntlet and been involved. But, you know, that's what happens with this group. So it was great that they were able to incorporate interviews from past, you know, from the past for them so that they were included in it. And it was great to see the little snippets of things we hadn't seen before. And, you know, people say, oh, you know, it's the same old Gene and Paul. You know, it's like a script. Well, I mean, it's the same story we've always known. So, I mean, what do you expect? Is it going to be that much different? You know, there's only so many ways you can tell the same story. But, yeah, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was great.
Agreed. Matt, you go right ahead.
You know, and I think everything Chris said, I totally agree with. I think the thing for me is it really, you know, having been a fan since, you know, I was one of those lucky kids in 1976 that was around as Kiss started to explode. And as a kid, you know, you couldn't think of anything better. And so in a lot of ways, the A&E biography was Kistry 101. You know, there was nothing that we didn't know, especially if you've read every book and had every magazine, watched every TV show and spun every record since you were a little kid. There's not an inch of those grooves that we don't know. And I think that's kind of what it made it the most fun. OK, because when you think about it, in the year 2021, we got 3.5, depending on how many commercials you cut out, hours worth of Kiss on TV. You know, and that was fun. The amount of like photos, the dizzying amount of photos flashing by, like you said, footage that we hadn't seen. You know, I think there was that home movies of Peter Criss playing the drums before he was in Kiss. I don't think I'd ever seen that. Obviously, everybody, I think, right away goes, the Kite Festival. Look, like, you don't want to see that footage. You know, I think everything about it, like you said, we know the story. I think my question would be, kind of, who do they think it was targeted to? You know, I don't think it was hard, you know, hardcore fans that it was targeted to, because we know all those stories. You know, we read every book. You know, we know that they look like, you know, football players in tutus, and they were too big, and, you know, and this and that and the other. To me, the magic was some of that new stuff, like where they go back into Electric Lady Studios.
Yeah.
And you think about the legendary people who have walked those halls, including Kiss. But, you know, for them to revisit that, I thought was really cool. You know, the parts where they're sitting alone together just talking. Like, I really, in my mind, and that kind of, I mean, obviously we'll get into a segment about what do we really want. I just want to hear them talk about writing songs. You know, I wanted to hear more of that. And that, to your point that you made, Chris, that you wish, you know, Ace and Peter were involved. I think everybody wishes that, in my mind, you want those members sitting together, maybe right, talking about certain moments that they all experienced. You know, let's hear about, you know, I think one of the moments that always comes near and dear to my heart, talk about walking onto the street for the Dress to Kill cover with Bob Gruen. What was it like? You know, I mean, you know, and it's funny when I talk to Bob Gruen, he says, nobody bats an eyelash. You got to be really weird to stand out in New York, you know? And it's like, but I mean, at some point they're young guys walking around the streets of New York in their makeup and suits on that corner. And, you know, you all seen the outtakes where people are looking at them like, yeah, so what?
Yep.
Take us to those moments. I think in a way that's the kind of hardcore stuff that I really would have liked, would have been more along the lines of, you know, take us behind the scenes on some of that stuff. Talk about going to Cadillac. You know, it's a gamble. You know, they weren't really big at that time. You know, and here they are in the pictures. You know, there they are in the parade, you know, the homecoming parade, things like that. I always like, you know, obviously, like you said, it's a close to 50-year career. How do you cram that into 3-something hours?
Right.
And my main thing, if anything, the thing that they glossed over too much was the music. Like, I really, you know, I think in the end of it, and I mean, even as Cam proves month in and month out, it's all about the music. Whether you're playing it on your acoustic guitar from your apartment or whether you're playing it with 100,000 watts of amps behind you with fire and flamethrowers and more makeup than your mom. See, I'm going right into the script. You know, it's just like when it comes down to it, it's all about those songs, and that's what you want. I would have liked more. I think, obviously, you know, people could say it's about the licensing. You can't afford every song, this and that and the other. But that's kind of what we want.
true. And is that not why they did the re-records is my question.
You know, oddly enough, and this is actually a fun note, a lot of that music that was the background music throughout was actually worked on by Tom Higgins. And anybody who listens to the Kiss Room knows Tom Higgins is the guy behind Classic 78. Yep. So the music that kind of sounds like Kiss, because he's a master and he has managed to harness that sound and come up with kind of songs that sound like Kiss, but aren't Kiss. And I was really thrilled for him. I thought, how great is that? You know, and to see somebody like that get his really great work showcased in a way. So awesome. there was a lot to love. I mean, I thought, you know, the whole thing was really great. You know, it's funny because in a lot of ways they covered very similar ground when they did The Second Coming, which you could say DVD, I think I have it on a two VHS, you know, box set. But the thing that's great is, you know, that they were able to cover a lot. To me, I think they spent a little too much time on here's why Ace and Peter are out. Everybody knows why. Yeah. You know, we all know. I think, and Gene even summed it up. Look, marriages don't last. Friendships don't last. Why do you think bands are going to last? Anybody out there that's listening to this, anybody who has ever known a band or been in a band or ordered from McDonald's with three other people on a weekly basis for lunch, you're not going to get along. You know, at some point, somebody wants more ketchup packets and you forgot them, Chris. And it's just like, you know, and then there's arguing and, you know, it's, I think the fact that almost 50 years later, there's any semblance of something that's still called Kiss is a testament to the fact of how hard they've worked. But you know what? It's no surprise that, you know, I mean, Cam, you're smart. You do a solo show. You can't only argue with yourself. Maybe Morgan doesn't want to blow up the balloons that week and you'd have a tussle. But outside of that, you know, it's like it's for, you know, the magic of the original Kiss, especially, it's for very talented, driven, charismatic, crazy, focused, maybe unfocused rock and roll kind of minds. Yeah. That's combustible, which is what makes it great. Because when you put all those ingredients together, you know you're going to get fire. When you get fire, it doesn't always last and burn as bright as you want. Sometimes it's out of control, and sometimes it goes out. So that's Kiss.
Yeah, that's great. All great points. And you've made me think of two things I want to touch on. The first one being, you would not believe how many times I argue with myself. I promise I'm 100% sane, okay? But I have plenty of conflicting thoughts when I'm putting a thing together. But yeah, could you imagine in a band? I mean, that dynamic, I couldn't imagine. And then secondly, talking about blowing up balloons, I was demanded by Morgan to legitimately get over here and blow these balloons up because I'm dizzy the last time that we've done it. I mean, I looked at her. She was like, I'm kind of spaced right now. And I'm like, what is wrong with you? She said, I think we tried to do it too fast because we kind of forgot. We got in a habit of getting something prepared. And we're like, we don't even have the balloons ready. And it's like an hour or two. So we're sitting over there hurrying, trying to blow up all these balloons. And she's like, okay, done this too quick. You're going to take over. So, yeah. I had to throw that in there.
It's great. You figure that, think about like in the early days, they were making their own costumes. You know, somebody's got to glitter all that stuff on. Somebody has to pack those, you know, those little flash pots. And chances are you might get a little dizzy, but you're probably not going to blow your hand off.
The safety value is a lot better with the balloons, let me tell you. It's also good for the neighbors upstairs. They don't have to worry about me burning a hole in the floor.
Right.
So, you know, all that aside, you know, you're exactly right, though, when you both of you guys are correct. You know, all the things that you touched on are things that I want to mention as well. But, you know, mentioning Tom and his tracks, I really didn't know who did those tracks. I know they were super familiar. I will tell you that by playing as much music as I have and trying to break it down as much as I have over the last year and a half with the Live Unplugged, I knew that he was going for, okay, this track right here sounds very Deuce. You know, the next one was very, very familiar of Strutter. I think we heard a little bit of like 100,000 years type of riff. So I knew what the plan was, and I was really interested to know who came up with those tracks, because I thought they did such a good job of harnessing that sound to the point that if you don't know the band, you're not going to recognize that, you know, you would think that was just their track in the background. And, you know, it's so funny, I, for the longest time being single before I got married, I thought everybody heard the same thing that I did, because I could point out, okay, that's not that track. There's something weird going on this one. This must be a different version. But Morgan had no idea, you know. I mean, she was just, to her, it was just background music, you know. And so it's funny how that goes. But they did a really good job. It did keep a classic vibe to it. I would like to have heard more. Of course, you know, we mentioned the re-records. They did those for a purpose, so I'm surprised that they did not get used in the footage. But I thought the whole thing was just fantastic. And I'll tell you an interesting point that we can probably elaborate on a little bit later. I knew the story, just like you mentioned. You guys, everybody knows the story. You can't rewrite history all that often. It has to be the same narrative for the most part. They're also trying to tell a story that you're on A&E, you're not on Access, you're not on you know, you're not doing your own streaming platform. You're not on Facebook, on your own page. I mean, you're trying to cater to a broad audience. Not all of them knows the story. So a lot of the same points have to be hit. But I will tell you this. The first night, my mother and my sister watched it, and they've not been admittedly big Kiss fans. Mom couldn't figure out for the life of me why I got into the band. But, you know, she sat down and watched the documentary. At the end of night one, she was like, you know, she's like, I kind of hate how things happened between, you know, Ace and Peter at the, you know, at the end of the 70s. I think she felt a little bit of sympathy towards them. Of course, their issues that they had, but also of, you know, the turmoil within the band. So it felt like she had almost a, her and my sister both kind of a pro Peter, pro Ace style, you know, kind of like that vibe. They kind of felt with them that, yeah, this was part of the lifestyle. But so they kind of saw a lot of the flaws that which Gene and Paul admitted, the ego, the, you know, the things that they all admit to that they all had. But by the end of the second night, when you come back around to the reunion and then you begin to see the conflict and the turmoil between Ace and Peter once again, well, then that kind of flipped to the narrative of I see where Gene and Paul is coming from. I wonder how many people that are not diehard Kiss fans who know the entire story may have had that kind of emotional roller coaster, because I felt like the story was told so well that you could certainly get on board with all of these characters. And just like in the early days, you can pick someone out that you seem to cling to or that you gravitate towards. And if that was your first time following this band, I would be really interested to see how that turned out to a lot of folks. Have you had any reaction from people who aren't the diehard group like we are?
You know, the problem is I don't know too many people who aren't the diehards. That's who I talk to. You know what I mean? Like, in a way, it would be interesting to talk to somebody who really, you know, doesn't know. But I think at this point in my life, most of the people that I talk to know, you know, are really pretty hardcore. I don't know any. I mean, do I know people who are casual fans? Sure. But they don't want to talk to me. But, you know, you know, I think that's the thing is like that's like I said, I'm not really sure who they intended the, you know, who's their target market. You know, were they, I don't necessarily think they were talking directly to us as hardcore fans, because they didn't tell us anything we didn't already know. You know, they used a lot. Gene used his, you know, we get you from caskets and condoms and coming and going. You can see that line coming down the street like a bus. You know, I don't know that there was anything. You know, the one part that there was a couple things that I didn't find them necessarily new, but I found them really, the fact that when they talked to Bob Ezrin about the Elder, and he still had that little gleam in his eye. You know, it seemed like a good idea at the time. You know, and you go, if only it had been a success. And I really loved that part, because like I loved that drawing that they showed of what looked like the Elder, like the door knocker that Gene drew in a hotel, had this idea. You know, I always think, you know, for me, like that time in my life, like 1980-ish, you know, when they're thinking about the Elder, it's comic books and Star Wars and, you know, Conan movies. And that was all right in my wheelhouse. When the Elder came out, the idea of he's probably going to fight a dragon and probably have a sword, and Linda Carter's going to show up in a bikini. You know, it's like I'm, you know, 12 years old or whatever. That all sounds perfect to me, right? So it's just like,
all is right with the world.
What could not be right? So it was just like, I thought that kind of, that was a really cool segment. I really it's funny. One of the, you know, one of the quotes very early on when they were talking about the look of Kiss and they showed the New York Dolls and things like that. And Paul's quote was something like, you know, you need to be the best you. And yes. I remember thinking, oh, that's the kind of thing you just write on the fridge and look at it in the morning and you feel good about it. You got to be the best version of you. I thought that was great. And the one that really, the moment that really got me, and this is, I think, and they put it at the end, and I thought was very smart when Gene starts to say, you know, you wanted the best and you got it. And he starts to choke up.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, you know, if you're Gene and you've heard that, like, think about, and I like to try and put myself in their mind. When you're walking up on stage and you're ready and you're just seconds away from plugging in and blowing that place up and being Kiss to a stadium full of people or whatever, and you hear you wanted the best, and you could there be anything better? Like, what else could get you psyched up? you know, I know anybody that listens to me on the Kiss Room, you know, I have JR actually saying you wanted the best and you got it. The hottest man in the world, Matt Porter. I have that. That's my ringtone and my alarm clock. You know what I mean? It's on my phone. What makes you more psyched to get out of bed than you wanted the best and you got it? And there's Paul saying, you know, you got to be the best version of you.
Yeah.
That's why Kiss is the best. They never say, oh, life is crappy. Oh, I have a hole in my shoe. You know, life is crappy and I don't want to. No, no. You wanted the best and you got it. And things aren't always going to be right. You know, they're going to have days where things are bad. That documentary showed everybody has problems. You know, Paul's book, I mean, more than anything, you know, they, you know, we didn't know for years about the ear. That's a major problem for him. You know, the idea of being deaf in his ear and having his, you know, all those problems clearly from his book, that was something, as you can imagine, really did affect the course of his life. But man, he overcame it. You know, when you get down to the bottom line, you say, you know what, for a guy that, you know, he was having a lot of turmoil, man, it sure seemed like he was having a good time. And I know I was. So it was just, you know, I think they captured a lot of that, that it wasn't always an easy ride, but nobody rides a roller coaster that goes flat and stays the same speed. You know what I mean? It's 50 years later, we're still talking about it.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I just had the soundbite when I do the beginning of the Live Unplugged with that you wanted the best. I wanted to incorporate that. And it just, for me, I mean, I'll tell you this without trying to get too tongue tied. When you play that music, and it doesn't matter if you play it to a coffee house of 10 people or you play it to an internet audience that you can, you know, you can reach them that way. There is something amazing about playing Kiss songs to an audience. And that's all I'm going to say. So it means something to me. I'm grateful to them because they, you know, gave us this music and this project. I don't know how they're going to feel. And when you're right, when Gene got to that point, man, I don't know. I can't think about ever not doing a Live Unplug again. I don't know how they must feel, you know, coming to the end of the road after 50 years. It's incredible. But it was a wonderful point. I love that. That's one of my favorite parts of the entire documentary. And I got a little bit choked up. Morgan looked at me and said, "Are you okay?" I said, "Give me about 2 minutes." And I think
I'll You know, it's funny. And while that aired on A&E, I don't know if you guys had a chance to see on YouTube, there was a video called The 70-Year-Old Demon. Did you catch that? It was, And, you know, really you say, I don't know how you could give it up. I think by the time you're 70 and you're putting on 30 to 40 pounds of armor, you know, and probably not sleeping in your bed for a couple weeks. I mean, they've been on tour. When you really think about it, you know, since the 70s, they've spent half their life sleeping in hotel rooms or on tour buses or somebody else's bed, and hopefully somebody nice looking. But the, when it comes down to it, is that I would think at some point you wake up and you say, you know what, I'd like to just go out into the pool and just sit here. And now I think Gene and Paul, especially, they're not wired to stop. Gene's quote about you're a shark and you have to keep moving or you die. That's Gene. I think every morning he's going to wake up and he's going to think, what can I do today? And in a lot of ways, you summed it up, Cam, is that ability to connect with people, you know, and, you know, just if you're playing it, the music by yourself, or you have a gig or your Kiss, or you want to connect with people. There's nothing greater than when you see a reaction. And I would think to be on a stage and be able to look out. And that's why I was liking the song We Are One. I see my face looking back at me. If you're Kiss and you look out and you see people with your face painted on them, tattooed on them, on your shirt. I'm looking at you right now. If this wasn't radio, like Cam's got his Dynasty shirt. Now think about how old that photo is. But man, just seeing it, I love it. You know, it's like that album, that time frame, that image, you know, and we've been living with that for so long. I would think at some point, I'd like to think Gene wakes up and go, you know what? I did good. I gave people a lot of fun. You know, you wanted the best, you got it, meant something, you know, and people will criticize, oh, this period they were phoning it in, or this song sucks or whatever. You know what? Everybody likes something different. somebody out there, and if you're listening to the Live Unplugged the Music of Kiss podcast, your favorite song might be "I Finally Found My Way Back to You." We want to hear from you. But the you know, it's one of those things where, you know, you really, and we won't wait long. But the you know, it's one of those things where, you know, I think watching the documentary to kind of just tie a lot of it together was a story of some really driven people. I love that footage when, you know, when they, and it was in the Second Coming DVD, where they get together for the first time and they start putting the makeup on again.
Oh yeah.
And they show Gene kind of doing those kind of vaudeville and then kind of Lon Chaney faces. And then without missing a beat, the eyes roll, the tongue comes out.
Yeah.
And it's the demon. And I remember when that VHS came out, that moment stuck to me like just indelibly, because it was that transformation that, you know, you could be doing this, you could be doing that, or you could be the demon. And but then the one scene that I don't think had been in the other was, now they walk into the kitchen and Shannon starts to laugh.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know what? No matter how big you think you are, your wife's going to laugh at you. You look silly, hon. You know, and I related to that. And I right away said to my own wife, I said, well, at least I'm not alone. So,
yeah. You know, Christopher, I'm going to come to you in just a minute. But you talked about that clip right there of showing him, you know, going back into character. I loved one of the things about this documentary where they did a quick flashback to like a picture of 1978. And then come back to 1996. I mean, it's like, what is old is new again. Very cool stuff. Chris, you know, piggybacking off that, your reaction, what have you spoke to anyone who have kind of seen it in a maybe not as diehard of a way? And basically, you know, what did you see when telling that story? Did they do a complete and honest review of it? I personally feel like it's probably the most honest that they have ever been in a documentary. So how do you feel about that?
Well, I definitely feel that it was, you know, one of the more honest documentaries. And it was, what was nice that I liked seeing myself was the relationship between Paul and Gene really being examined and being heartfelt. You know, there's been times when Paul would say some pretty tough stuff about Gene over the years, you know. So it was nice to hear him say, you know, I knew that, you know, I was better with you, you know, things like that. And as far as casual fans go, I mean, that may have been where they were directing this. And I did talk to a few people who, I guess you would consider them more casual than diehard. And they were, you know, kind of the one in particular, he had caught on to them around the time of the reunion tour. So he, you know, had heard and seen some stuff from the past, but he really lived it in that moment. And then became a fan, and you know, from that point on. And you know, Ace and Peter didn't stick around too long. Then we had Eric and Tommy come in, and he was, you know, he's like me, he's an all eras band, doesn't matter, you know, who's wearing the makeup, you know, it's Kiss, you know. But he felt like the story was really in depth. Of course, he probably didn't know a lot of the stuff that came before the reunion tour, so to him that whole first episode was probably gold, you know. So I can see, and I've always said that every Kiss fan, their reaction to any era of Kiss or any album or documentary is really hung up on where they came in, you know, in the history themselves, you know. So I came in the 80s, so I wasn't introduced to the makeup and costumes at first. So maybe that makes me easier to be an all eras fan as opposed to the guys that discovered them in 73, 74. And they were like, oh, you know, this isn't the same band. They're not dangerous. They're not dark. You know, it's all about perspective.
Yeah. I think that's a great point. The fact that, and it's one of the most fun things about doing podcasting or just even being on social media, is to get the perspective of people who jumped in later than I did,
yep,
before I did, or, you know, where did you come in, I think, is an important thing, because I always say, like, you know, people love to rip on the elder. Oh, the elder's no good or whatever. if somebody gives you a stack of CDs and the elder's right in the middle and you've never heard any of it, yeah, people, it's not going to, you're going to be like, gee, what is this? But at the time, as they were coming out, it made sense. At least it did to me, as I'm pretty weird. But the, you know, it's one of those things where I think that is the most fun thing. Like, and I always tell the story of when I was on, Creatures of the Net with Cassius Morris and his co-host Sapphire, when Sonic Boom came out. Now, that was the first new Kiss album in their young lives. And at the time, it was fascinating to talk to them, because if you took their ages and added them together and doubled it, I was still older, I think. And it was just like, you know, but it was fascinating for these young people who were feeling that same excitement at, like, you know, maybe Cassius might have been 12. I mean, he's such a superstar, but he was 10 or 12 at the time. But it, you know, it was exciting for me as an old dinosaur to find out and see somebody having that same kind of excitement with Kiss that I'd had at that age. And I think really when it comes down to it, it's like you said, Cam, when you're singing the songs, it's the music that really defines it and has unified us all for so many years. Like, no matter which album's your favorite, there's somebody else that's their favorite and they want to talk to you about it. And I think that's always been kind of the most fun thing. You like that song? I love that song. You know, it's just, you know, and I think that's was really one of the takeaways. I think, and Chris, you really nailed it, was when did you come in? Like, I thought they could have had a little bit more Bruce Kulick. I think Bruce had a bigger role than they let on. I think Bruce was a driving force of those 80s. And I love that edit where he talked about, you know, joining the band, and he was asked to join the band. And then the next week I was on stage and they cut to that Animalized clip, because that Animalized live, that VHS is magic. And that at that is such a testament to what the band was at that time. Pure energy, playing the songs real fast, hopping around, jumping. But I thought that was an edit that stood out in my mind, because for Bruce, I thought, what a great little time travel clip where he talks about, and the next week as I was on stage and there they are, and he points out, and it's, you know, it's, and magic.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm. I agree 100%. That's one of the things that truly, when talking to people, because I do work with the public, and I have a lot of people that come by and they know that I'm a Kiss fan, and they'll say, I learned so much from this documentary. I didn't know anything beyond the original four. Some would say I came in after Tommy and Eric, so it was neat to go back and hear about the original Carnation, you know, the original inception of the band. And I've heard a lot of different reviews, and I will tell you this, and this is where we can kind of segue real nicely into the next part that I wanted to speak about. There are some shortcomings on the documentary, and there are some moments that I think left you feeling a little bit uncomfortable, because any band with a 50-year period is going to have some moments that are not so, you know, glorious, not so glamorous. I'll tell you this, it was very much a surprise to me how many people messaged me and said, I feel bad for Bruce and Eric Singer. Obviously, it was all across the board sympathy for Eric Carr, because we all hurt in that sense. I think it surprised a lot of people, and it surprised me, the reaction that it generated when you heard about, you know, Bruce and Eric Singer leaving. When it got to that point in the documentary, I think that hearing how it was done, hearing them be honest about it, and hearing Eric Singer be 100% candid and say, this isn't my band, this is Paul and Gene's band, it's not Paul and Gene and Eric, they're Paul and Gene are going to do what Paul and Gene are going to do. I still heard a little bit of emotion, and I think a lot of people did, that it still hurts him to this day. You know, I'm not trying to like deeply analyze, but, you know, it was very obvious from the things we've heard and read and seen that he was very invested in this band, him and Bruce both. And I was just really shocked at how many people, that's what I'll take away from it, how many people felt empathy for those guys. As exciting as the reunion was, you were getting rid of two members who had such a pivotal part in steering the ship through the stormy seas. But yeah, pun intended, but it's the truth. I mean, you know, they were there in the highs and lows, and it really shocked me how that resonated with people, you know.
Well, especially when you think about that, Carnival of Souls was being worked on,
you know, at that time. Yeah. And Bruce, in a lot of ways, Bruce was one of the driving forces behind Carnival of Souls because it was the Kiss album of that group, you know, whereas, you know, a lot of that, everything that kind of came after the reunion was based on the original four. But Carnival of Souls is very much, you know, trying to be like a current kind of sound and very different. And look, I'll be the first to admit, I had that bootleg of Carnival of Souls like everybody else, but it came out, you know, dropped onto a crappy 33rd generation cassette while the reunion tour was going on. And I didn't want anything to do with that. I wanted the reunion tour. The reunion tour was one of the most glorious times to be a Kiss fan, I'll say it. And, you know, but yet in the same way, you know, you take that song Childhood's End, and as it's fading out, you know, you hear Gene say, "You've got something about you. You got something I need." The core, the blood, it's always there. Mm-hmm. And I think at that time, you know, you got to say Bruce and Eric really did, you know, champion work to step aside. But man, that original, that reunion tour, that was magic. I'll say it.
Amen.
Yeah. And I will, you know, I'll be 100%, you know, I owe a lot to that reunion tour, because if it hadn't been for that, you know, we wouldn't have got to 2004, 2014, 2019. It all had to take place. But as far as a moment in the documentary that I felt, you know, really just kind of hit home, you know, making a tough decision, you know, to have to let two people go who have done nothing, but well, they did everything you wanted. And then to let them go, to go back to two members who you clearly were frustrated with, you know, it was just such an emotional impact I felt. And it surprised me how many people said that that was one of the tougher parts of the documentary to watch. So what about you guys? What parts took you back? What kind of made you think, man, you know, that's hard to go back over? Or are there anything that you guys thought, that could have been done a little bit better?
You know, for me, what you just touched on was a big one, because I remember, you know, reading interviews with both Eric and Bruce at that time. And I think that they, as much as they may have, it may have stung for them, I think they knew it had to happen.
And
after MTV Unplugged, there was no denying that it had to happen. It was just a matter of when and how, and, you know, that kind of thing. The Eric Carr, that's always a real tough issue, because there's fans who feel like Paul and Gene totally did him wrong. And then there's others who see it the exact opposite. I'm somewhere in the middle. I think they probably could have done better by him, but at the same time, it's just like any other part in Kistory, the band has to go on. Right. And, you know, and they did. And when he wanted to come in and do the God Gave Rock and Roll to You video, he was there, and they were, you know, proud to have him. And they mentioned what a great job he did. So those are tender moments. You know what I mean? And so it was kind of like, you know, well, how are they going to go about this? You know, I was always worried about, you know, what the reaction is going to be to the Eric Carr thing, and even the dropping of Eric and Bruce for the reunion tour. But, I, you know, not too much that I wouldn't that I would change about that documentary. I thought it was pretty good. Pretty good for 2021. You know, two nights of Kiss. I mean,
right. Like I said, I think I just would have probably tried to focus a little less on, you know, the struggles. Like I thought they spent a little too much time going over and over and over that Ace and Peter, you know, just, you know, couldn't. I don't want to say couldn't stay in the band, but maybe didn't want to stay in the band. People weren't seeing that. We get it. You know, you can't always get along. I think, you know, it's easy to sit. And I try not to watch it with my Facebook University psychiatry degree and try and figure out, you know, what were they thinking? Like in my mind, you know, when Eric gets sick and the band continues, it's because that the music and being in the band, that's all. For everybody in their life has struggles, but when, you know, when you find out how much problems in his own mind Paul Stanley has had, the music is the outlet, and that's where you feel safe. It's where you feel your best. You want to escape to that. you know, and rather than sit and kind of cry and, oh man, like, I mean, sure, they feel bad for their bandmate, their friend, their loved one, somebody who spent, you know, a good chunk of his life with them. But the music, creating Kiss, you know, you dive into it. And I think of some of the times, even in my own life, that have been the worst. And you go to the things that make you feel good. And it's not all, and you know, look, it's not always, and I only mean this in the nicest way, it's not always things that are healthy for you. It's not always things that maybe you, if you thought about it, you would do, but you go right back to them. And, you know, for them, it's creating the music of Kiss. And I think that was kind of my takeaway was, look, you know, we have to keep going, you know, and you know, we have to keep this machine rolling, you know, because that's what we do. And that's where we feel like, goes back to Paul's quote, you got to be the best version of you.
Yeah. Another that I liked from it was when Gene simply said, you know, you have to do what makes you special.
Yep.
I mean, so many good little one-liners from that. I even posted that on the page. You know, I feel like this documentary, if anything, really showed the human side of those two. That if you look at any footage from, you know, starting 74 onward, they have always had an image to uphold. You go to the 80s, they're on Oprah Winfrey, they're on all these talk shows, you know, they're the womanizing, you know, creatures of the night. And then, you know, here you get 2021 and they can just sit down and say, you know, this is what we're feeling, this is what we're thinking. You know, they kind of literally, in all sense, I feel like they took off all of the mask, you know, and he even got to see Paul's bare feet. The internet's went crazy. I really didn't expect so many people, but I do remember being like, wow, there's Paul Stanley's feet, whatever. And I went on, but it's become a talking point on a lot of the groups, you know. I'm waiting for a page to be dedicated to pictures of Paul Stanley's feet now.
Oh,
so
it's coming.
It's coming.
Well, you know, it's funny that you mentioned, like, you know, them on Oprah, because, I mean, when you watch that, that is one of the more cringy, you know, 80s, because, I mean, they're trying so hard to be, you know, Gene is trying so hard to, you know, make Oprah blush and say outrageous things and trying hard to go back to being kind of like this very sleazy kind of a character. And I think really what would be a great, fascinating series, and they should really do this, is make them all sit together in a room and watch stuff like that and give us a commentary track, you know, have them react to a 30-year-old, you know. And I remember that like it was yesterday, racing home from college to watch that. And there's a whole much longer story behind that, but the, you know, and it's, you watch it now and it's like, for them, it's like watching a home movie, you know, and you go, oh my God, like, I'm so embarrassed that I was looking like that, or I said that, or, you know, that's before I had a daughter who's now, you know, 30 or whatever. And, you know, it's, I don't know. I think that's, you know, for us, it's been something we've watched all along the way. For them, it's the thing they lived all along the way. And I think, you know, it would be fun for me. I'd rather hear, rather than what were the problems in the band, go back and watch the stuff that was great or super cringy, one or the other.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, Kissology began that really well. It was a good trend that was happening with the commentary on each disc. I think that was one of my favorite parts of that entire series, was just getting to hear them talk about their recollections. I would love a career-long span of that. Will we get it? I don't know. Maybe as time goes on, I can hope that maybe, you know, the merchandise is going to keep rolling, the music's going to keep coming out, they're going to keep being products sold. Maybe one of these days, when it's the dust has settled and they're no longer on the road, we can get them in a studio somewhere to just talk, you know. That's what I would hope.
Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned Kissology, because really this A&E documentary, I think, could easily be kind of repackaged into Kissology. Let's call it Kissology 4 or whatever. But maybe they would say to themselves, and maybe Ace and Peter have watched it now, and maybe everybody's had a chance to digest it, record some new segments and ask, hey, look, guys, we really want your commentary on this. Would you reconsider and give us a deluxe edition that has, I want all four of them in the room together. I want six of them in the room together. I want all of them talking about what it was like at Kiss Unplugged. Chris, you mentioned that earlier, you know, after the Unplugged, that the reunion was inevitable. I want to know, what was it like as they're playing rock and roll all night with everyone on the stage knowing that they've captured lightning in a bottle again. Yeah. Most bands didn't have one firefly in a bottle. Here they were catching lightning again, and I have to think they knew it. You know, that night as they're doing that, and when Ace comes walking by, I'm back! And you know what? There's some kind of magic. And at some point you're looking over and going, oh my God, this guy, you know, this and that, what, you know, 20 years ago, he said this or that or where they are. When they get them all on stage, that's what it's about. And I think that's what I'd like. I wish they would take this, what I call the framework, use the A&E that we saw and go back and keep adding to it. You know, give us more. Give us the 20-hour version.
I'm going to be the one to say it. The only way that happens is Gene cracks open that checkbook.
You know what? I think that's what, obviously, right away it came back in the obviously every, you know, website had, oh, Ace said they weren't going to offer enough money, or it was insulting, or this and that and the other. But you know what? At some point, you know, nobody's getting younger. It's nice to have your legacy recorded. I always kind of like, you know, and again, not to get all deep and kind of like, you know, tied to anything in the real world, but you know, if you have home videos of like your family and people that aren't around anymore, and you want to hear their voice, you want to hear them on, you know, on the video. And I mean, it's, and not to get all grim with it, but nothing lasts forever, you know? Right. And I think at some point, you know, for all of them, for everybody on the planet, you know, you want to leave something behind. Look, it's not about the money. At some point, they all have enough money. Peter's going to go back out again in the fall and do convention tours, and you can get his autograph. And that is all about the money. You know, you want $30 for an autograph or $70 for a photo or whatever. But, you know, you want that experience of talking to him. You know, a couple times at these expos, you know, you get to walk up, shake his hand. Peter's the best. If you do go to any of these upcoming conventions, he's talkative. I'll admit, I hugged Peter Criss when we saw him in New York. And you guys, Peter Criss, I've been a fan since I'm a little kid. You know, you're freaking out. You know, that's why I think I really would have liked more involvement of Ace and Peter, because they were such a part of it when everything in the world was Kiss. You know, not that different than now, but the, you know, it really, that and that's kind of my, we could go over and over and over, but it's those, you know, those original four. I want them, one, I want them as involved as they can be, but two, I really kind of want them all to be as happy as they can be, you know, and they've given us so much happiness. I want them all just to be happy. That's it.
You should definitely be their PR man.
You can be my, you know,
Well, I think we've all loved it. And I mean, the fact that here's three of us, you know, obviously we're all powerful and attractive men. We would have gotten together based on our good looks. But I think we've all come together based on being Kiss fans. And yep. Just think about your list of friends that you have. You know, we joked about it at the start where, you know, what did non-diehards think? And I said, I don't know any non-diehards. Is, I think, because we really, you know, we have all been brought together by the magic that these guys created. And I would, like I said, I was thrilled they had, you know, Bob Ezrin and Eddie Kramer and people like that. You, in a way, you wish that Bill Acoin could have been still around for these kind of moments, because yeah. Bill and Sean, you know, Sean Delaney, those two, such huge, huge parts. There's not that much really as far as their thoughts. You know, I would love it if that stuff existed. So I think that's, I guess in the end, a lot of it is, you know, it's been such a fun ride all the way. No reason it can't be fun right to the end.
Agreed.
Very true. Very true. Couple points that I would like to make before we dismiss today, before the bell rings and we have to go back to real life. Right. My thing, I'll tell you a couple of things that also stood out to me. Maybe I was just not in the loop, but did you realize that there was Cobo Hall footage from 75 that existed of that quality that had them walking around the venue with the Kiss sign? I honestly did not know that. I'll be the first to tell you. I didn't realize that there was video archived footage of that. We saw the picture on the back of the album cover of Alive, but I didn't realize that there was. So was that just me? Was that just a new revelation to me, or did you guys notice that?
2021, you can clean up footage really well. I think I might have seen some of that stuff. Some of that stuff might have been brand new. You know, I don't remember specifically where that might have been, you know, or maybe I'd never seen it before. At some point, you know, after all these years, I don't get any smarter, and the footage, you know, you maybe start to forget which bootleg tape it was on, or maybe it was somebody's brand new footage. But, you know, if I was smarter, I could tell you exactly if I'd seen that or not. But yeah, that stuff was great. Anything like that, any of that early footage, you know, anytime you see that, it's always a treat.
Yeah. Do y'all have any video tidbit that just a portion, you kind of mentioned the rehearsal footage. What about the 76 footage of Peter in the studio? We assume he's practicing Beth. That black and white footage, I had never seen that. So to me, that really stood out. As a fan, we got a whole lot of neat little video portions. And if it wasn't new footage, it was cleaned up and doctored to pristine quality. I think Julian Gill had mentioned that a lot of the Alive 2 promos had been remastered to 1080 4K. And I will admit a lot of that looked fantastic. I'll even go as far as to say Largo 77 looked like it could have been recorded last week. Little things like that stood out to me. What about you, Chris? Any kind of video documentation on there that really surprised you?
Yeah, I mean, the Peter in the studio thing was huge. And then, of course, going back to that footage of him playing drums way before Kiss was another one that was just like, wow, that's the stuff that I was looking for. You know, because I knew all the other stuff we were going to see, but it was those tidbits, you know, that we've never seen before. And that's the stuff I'm hungry for, because, you know, when you know the story backward and forward, you know, you got to give me something new.
For sure.
Anything? And the cleanup on some of that stuff was amazing. I was really glad to see that.
100%. Yes, sir. Matt?
Yeah, that's obviously one of the things I would say, just a shout out to the production crew, because visually, you know, in a way, that's half of it. I kind of would have just liked to see all the footage and the photos, and maybe they don't need to even have the commentary. Just show us all that stuff. You know, it's like, you know, that stuff that still makes you kind of pop off the front of your chair and go, oh, look at that. I never saw that before. You know, like that's the most fun part. And the fact that the quality of it, you know, so really hats off to everybody on that crew that found footage we'd never seen, photos we'd never seen, and made it look spectacular, you know, really cleaned it up in a way that you wouldn't think possible. And then again, I mean, every 100th generation VHS bootleg, you know, that we have, that we've been watching from, you know, underneath the counter at that record store in 1980, you know, it came from somewhere. Somebody had that master tape. It just wasn't me. You know, I had that wrinkly VHS tape from, you know, a long time ago.
Be kind, please rewind. and you know, another thing that when I look, I made a little checklist of things I wanted to talk about. Were you surprised that there wasn't too much of a section there for the end of the road? I mean, were you surprised that there weren't a whole lot of Tommy Eric documentation? You know, not, there wasn't a whole lot of footage of them post 2004 up to 2019, 2021. I mean, that kind of gap, you know, Sonic Boom was overlooked. I understand they had a whole lot of stuff they had to cover, but were you surprised that the documentary wasn't more in favor of the current lineup? I think a lot of people really expected it to be, hey, this is Kiss, this is 2019, 2020, 2021, end of the road. Then we really didn't get that. I think
I expected that myself. I mean, simply because, you know, you see Gene and Paul spend a lot of time. I think they feel like they have to somehow justify the, you know, departure of Ace and Peter, and then at the same time, you know, defend Eric and Tommy. And so I expected to see more of that. But there again, you know, when you're talking about 50 years of stuff and that time frame of three and a half hours, there's only so much you can do if you want to cover a little of everything, you know. So,
yeah.
But also, I think that speaks to the fact that the narrative of the DVD or the show, there's no drama really in the last 10, 20 years. Like, they don't fight. They just go out, do the shows, go on tour. Sonic Boom, Monster, maybe Sonic Boom, who knows the music. Maybe they couldn't play any of it because Walmart owns it. I don't know. You know, it's I really thought to myself, in a way, it's one of the things that people might even find a little boring is the last bunch of years, there's no drama. They don't fight. They go out and do it. Everybody shows up on time. They do their shows, you know, and I think that for the narrative of, oh, this band that went to the top but then hit the skids, the last couple years have been nice and calm. You know, it's like...
Yeah, because mostly it's just been touring and then a couple albums. That's it. I mean, that's...
Sure. And the ending might, and obviously, again, only pure speculation, the ending might have been, and here's the last show. Because really, by this time, technically, they had said we would have been seeing this final show. Yeah. And obviously, you know, like everybody else on the planet that got the snap and we all disappeared for the last year and a half, you know, it's that ending, that very kind of concise bookended ending hasn't happened yet. And I wonder if they, if in their minds, when they first started thinking about it, we're going to take you up to the last show. But then again, that's a whole other documentary would be what exactly will it be like on that last show? That could be a whole thing with that. I do like the idea that they've talked about that this A&E documentary might show up in theaters. You know, I'd go to see it in a theater. That'd be a blast. You know,
it's I hadn't heard that. Screen.
You know, I'd go watch that. I'd buy it on DVD, but you know, as things start to open up and, you know, you can all cross yourself and think to yourself, I can't wait till, you know, everything's just back to normal. But, you know, if you go back to the theater, really loud, I mean, I have pretty loud sound system in my house, which, you know, nobody but me likes, but the, you know, it's one of those things where, nothing like being in the theater. You know, it would be fun.
Agreed. Yeah, I would have to echo those statements 100%. That's one thing that you mentioned. There will be a document, a document of some sort, a documentary out there that certainly will show that very last trip, that last end of the road. So you can about bet on that you'll see that. I personally love the Amazon Prime or the Prime Video copy that you could buy for $5 that had both of the parts in it. I don't know if you guys have got that or not. That was so enjoyable to watch without commercials.
Oh,
it was like watching it all over.
That was the worst part of watching it live on A&E was all the commercial breaks.
Yeah, you would really get into it and then it would come to a stop.
Yeah.
6 minutes of, you know, Geico auto, you know, commercials.
That lady, that lady beating the iPad.
Yeah.
Did not stop. Like, my God.
Absolutely. Guys, listen, one last thing I'm going to mention to you because I want to wrap it up with this. I told Matt, and I think I told you, Chris, that I wanted to touch on this briefly. Off the soundboard, I've been wanting to kind of mention that, and that'll be kind of our conclusion to the A&E portion, but it does tie in well with some of the things we've got we have got the documentary, and now we have got a great, pristine soundboard recording that we can enjoy all the time. I mean, real quick, what are your thoughts on that? Me personally, I'll say mine and I'll be done. 10 out of 10, sound quality is amazing. Set list is amazing. Musicianship is amazing, just like we thought it would be with Ace and Eric in the band. You guys go right ahead. What do you think?
A great way, you know, to document that very brief period of the band. Like you said, great sound quality. I have pissed my neighbors off more than once recently with with that release, and I'm not afraid to do it again. And see, I mean, it's just this is the kind of stuff that I love. And they're supposed to be doing a series of these, so that's something to look forward to. And people always say, "Oh, what about another new Kiss album?" You know what? I don't see that happening. Give me those soundboard albums. You know, I'd rather hear those.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think to have a document of that era of the band, which was pretty short-lived, but I always find it kind of just very interesting to hear Ace playing on something like Lick It Up or Heaven's on Fire, you know, something he didn't originate. But so it adds his flair to it. I mean, obviously, it's funny how, you know, you can talk about different eras of the band and things like that. But for the most part, everything on that set list is those early couple albums. So when you do get him playing, you know, even something like Talk to Me, that obviously was around the end of his time originally in Kiss. I like that that's on there. You know, But I mean, look, I could listen to God of Thunder as I'm driving around it, you know, a billion times, and it's just a little different version. And, you know, it's obviously, you know, certainly a greatest hits kind of a set list as they had been doing really ever since the reunion tour. But I think more than anything, the thing that I love is the fact that everybody sounds great. You figure it's 2001. Paul's voice is still in top shape. You know, he's can still do, like, when you think about it, in the 70s, he didn't really do all that really high register kind of stuff. By the 80s, he's doing all that really high-end kind of screaming. Now you got the best of both. You know, that really is this whole – it captures his voice in the whole spectrum of Paul's, you know, greatness. And I think that was really one of my takeaways, was I think it's a great place to kind of start, because as far as the – it really is a band sounding fantastic. So, yeah, and the quality is amazing. So,
yeah, kind of leaves me thinking, what could have been? You know, if that group right there had continued, I mean, they had a lot of firepower. Eric Singer's background vocals, I thought, were phenomenal. So nice to hear him. He adds such a depth to that. I love that. And you know what? Last thing I'll say about that, just imagine a Hot in the Shade or an Asylum or Creatures of the Night off the soundboard release. I mean, you know, we can dream, but maybe we'll see what happens. That'd be unbelievable.
You know, I'd love to think that could exist. The problem is, then you start to be realistic, is that there might not have been technology to get a lot of that stuff. Like, certainly the earliest years, they would have had to, like when they did Alive, they had to bring in a big truck, you know, and it was a big deal to try and get. By 2001, the way technology was, you know, you could probably put a flash drive into the soundboard and just record the whole show. But like, you know, that's, I think my fear is that maybe some, like, would I love an Asylum era soundboard? Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I'm not sure that it exists. You know, it's like,
we can actually, Matt, to be 100% honest with you, I think we can get that, because if you take a look at Bruce Kulick's video blog, he does feature the soundboard recording. I don't remember which show it is, but it's the Who's Won't Get Fooled Again. And it sounds amazing. So it gives me hope that the entire concert is out there.
You know, that's the thing. There's snippets like there. I've seen that. Yeah. Won't Get Fooled Again. Like, but is there a full show? Yeah. And maybe it's the one from Stabler Arena, April 1st, 1986. It'd be great. But, you know, you never know. It's just we can hope for the best. Like you said, I think that's always been the most fun, is kind of hoping that they'll give us more.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure. Thank you guys so much for just hanging out and talking. I'll let you guys go ahead and plug your group pages and things. Of course, your programs, things you got going on. We will end with that. Gentlemen, let's do this again. Pleasure to talk to you guys. I have had an absolute thrill tonight. Chris, Matt, thank you guys. Matt, you go ahead, and then Chris, you follow. Where can we find you at?
Well, look, the funny thing, first of all, anybody, we talked throughout this interview about where, you know, was it directed toward diehard fans or casual fans? If you just sat and listened to us for the last over an hour, I think you're a diehard fan, you know, or I lost you somewhere around Albuquerque, you know, we'll look for you when we're on the way back. But the, you know, so I think, you know, that's really a fun way to look at it. You know, podcasting is certainly fantastic. Depending on when you listen to this, obviously Nashville Rock and Pod is coming up. It's all about podcasting. If you're somebody who enjoys podcasting, who enjoys listening to a knucklehead like myself yammer on, or any of the other people with their phenomenal podcasts that we know, and you all know who you like, come to the Nashville Rock and Pod Expo, hang out, talk. We're going to have the best time ever. And obviously, if you enjoyed anything that I said, you can find me on the Kiss Room. Go to thekissroom.com. I'm back to doing once a month. You know, it's just really, it's what I do for fun. You know, it's something that obviously, you know, we talk about, you know, who's in the band and who's not in the band. I mean, this is now that we're into the 10th season of the Kiss Room. You know, the faces change, but it's always fun. Excuse me, I just, you know, had some Gene Simmons cola before, and that just came back up. But the, so go to thekissroom.com. You know, Cam, I really appreciate you having me on. I think, obviously, you know, I enjoy what you do with Alive Unplugged, the music of Kiss. It's always fun to hear that. Chris, I love your work. Obviously, you do a ton of graphics. I think you even did the graphics for Alive Unplugged, the music of Kiss. So it's just, you know, it's a great community where everybody gets to hang out together. You know, like I said, I think what ties us all together is that we like talking about Kiss, listening to Kiss, and having the most fun that we can.
Absolutely. Well, you'll find me in the Kiss World Facebook group. You know, you'll also find me all over the Kiss Room Facebook group a lot of times,
which and, I thank you for.
and now a Live Unplugged. I love what you do, Cam. And this is like one of the best fan things I've seen in a long, long time. You know, it's just you bring your own flavor to the music and the way you include all the fans. You got your own podcast, and it just adds to this really great, positive Kiss community, you know, and I just think we need a lot more of that. So, you know,
I couldn't do it without you guys. I mean, I really couldn't.
It's all a group effort, you know, four wheels on a car, right? You can't get anywhere with two flat tires, right?
There you go.
You know what? It gives us a digital campfire to gather around. That's always the fun part. You know, when you think about it, on a Saturday night, once a month, you come on, you play your songs. We all chime in. Hey, how's everybody doing? And you're like reading off the comments. And then we all clap when the balloons come. And it's a great fun time. So it's and hopefully nobody's getting too dizzy, you know, but the it's something for everybody to just kind of gather around and enjoy.
She'll keep blowing those balloons up. You keep playing, you know, Just a Boy or something like that. So,
yeah, that was awesome.
That was great.
That was fun.
Anytime you hear somebody playing the Elder live, you know you got a good fan.
All right, man, thank you. That was a blast. We got more coming up. I don't know, you know, this will drop before the next Facebook Live, but, you know, the You Wanted the Best series is coming up, and you know, we're going to get diverse in that. I've already got your video, Chris. I know, Matt, you're working on yours. And let me tell you, you will be working on yours.
Not you may, you
I
will.
I saw that reaction.
I know.
Yeah, I am. But it's going to be fun, and you guys make it that way. So, gentlemen, I'm just going to say thanks again. Y'all have a wonderful night. Let's do this again soon, and, you know, let's just keep rocking and rolling. You guys stay safe, okay?
Always a pleasure, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Have a good night, and thank you all for listening to Live Unplugged, the Music of Kiss podcast series. We'll catch you next time.
And that's our show. Thanks for listening. Be sure to check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/AliveUnplugged. I'm Cameron Duty, reminding you that it ain't a crime to be good to yourself. We'll see you next time.